Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
That you control, 603-283-6160. That's the number that you can call to bring up whatever's on your mind, talk about what we're talking about, if you're so moved to, or bring up something totally new. It's up to you. 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
Riley.
And Nikki.
And we were actually already on the phone with a caller, Dave Ridley in New Hampshire. So what else is on your mind tonight?
Yeah, so I guess I'm just Inspector Dave tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, like I was saying, I just had this idea of, you know, getting out there, cleaning up the roads, letting people tell me where they want me to clean, and then afterwards they can look at it and, you know, pay me what they think it was worth. Or, I'll be doing some of it on a volunteer basis, too. But I guess if folks want to know more about I should also say one idea would be to make it more of an activist thing. I was thinking about kind of adopting Ernie Hancock's idea that we need more more liberty signs everywhere so we don't have to publicize it. So one idea would be to wear some kind of a sign with some URL on it, you know, like advertising some liberty organization in New Hampshire. That would be one thing that could be done. But if folks want to know more about what I'm trying to do, I guess just go to forum.shiresociety.com, and I posted some details and some pictures. And I guess some people remember the URL. I should probably sing it. forum.shiresociety.com.
Oh, my God. It's the Ridley O song or tune. So yeah, I really like that idea, Ridley. It kind of reminds me of, I was doing this thing. I only did it once, and I need to keep doing it, but I wanted to do this thing called Meet a Free Stater and just like have people come up and talk to us with signs that say Meet a Free Stater. And yours, it kind of reminded me of that because it's like, how are you going to hate someone who's on the side of the road picking up your trash?
Well, they did something similar with the open carry trash pickup, where it's like, wow, all of these people,
nice.
Like, you know, it catches your eye, like, why does that guy have an AR-15 strapped to his back?
I didn't know anything.
And then
you're
like, oh my goodness, they're picking up trash. And it's just like, it gives that an association in your head where it's like, well, these people are clearly open carrying firearms, which is legal in the state of New Hampshire. But they're also, you know, like a lot of the liberals are like, people with guns are murderers.
Yeah.
But they're just picking up trash.
Yeah.
So it kind of gives that positive association with gun owners or, you know, if people just wearing freedom oriented shirts, look at these free staters, because there's a lot of people that are like, the free staters are coming to New Hampshire and they're trying to destroy our state, and like there's a lot of that like fear mongering.
They want to ruin our democracy.
Yeah, there's a lot of that fear mongering aspect of it. But if they saw free staters doing things like picking up trash, walking old ladies across the street, you know, donating to food pantry, like doing like good, wholesome things, which obviously plenty of free staters are doing that. It just doesn't necessarily get like
attention.
Mainstream press. But yeah, the more attention we could bring to positive stuff like that, the better, you know? And if it inspires other people to start doing kind, awesome stuff like that too, like that's awesome. So.
It's been so long, I'd actually kind of forgotten about it, but I think I actually might be the guy who started those open carry litter pickups. I know I did one in 2007.
Wow.
And another thing that happened was, like, for example, when some people were arrested in Manchester, or at least they were harassed by police for open carry, the way we went about protesting the police was to start an open carry litter pickup all around the police department. And so we were picking up litter with our firearms on. And that also seemed pretty useful.
Wow, that's pretty ballsy, because I feel like they would, you know, call up their buddies, like, we got a bunch of people out here with guns, but what are they going to do? You're just picking up trash.
Right.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your service also, Ridley. That's a really great idea, and I love it. But two segments ago, maybe now, because we got a lot of calls there, a lot of really interesting calls, learned about some psychedelic and then maybe just mystical experiences from some of our regular callers. That's pretty cool. We started reading this article from Symbosity.com. Oh, I've been reading it wrong. It's just Symbosity.com. Sorry about that. I think I was saying Symbiosity. and it is called Understanding the Practice of Psychedelic Spirituality by Daniel Hanna. And he went off just saying that it isn't just as simple. Having a psychedelic experience isn't just as simple as misfiring chemicals in your brain. It actually connects you to the spiritual realm. And he says, before getting into how psychedelics blast you into another dimension, we need to do a quick crash course of spirituality so you have that context. Existence has layers, and you vicariously exist in multiple realms at once. Our universe is just one tiny piece of an otherwise infinite realm. There's a whole lot more information around us than what you and I can perceive. However, some people, such as shamans, mediums, and mystics, can naturally access some of this otherworldly information. The dimension of experience discovered through psychedelics is always there beneath the surface. It's a timeless, formless, and ethereal realm which our higher selves reside in. We're only one new sentence in, but I got something to say. I just got to say, when you do psychedelics and you have those experiences, that's just something to me. I feel like it's just something you start to know, that it's always there. Like,
yeah.
On DMT, the walls melt, and you just have this knowing that it could always be this way. You could perceive it if you knew how. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Riley?
I vaguely know what you mean, yeah.
It's just a knowing.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, hearing voices saying that. I don't know. And that's what this guy seems to say, too. And it's just, like, comforting whenever you hear a human have similar experiences as you.
And it's interesting because sometimes, you know, you'll know something, but it's not always, like, present in the front of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you don't, like, know how to put it into words.
Right.
So when somebody says it and you're like, yes, that's what I've been thinking for all this time, but, you know, I just didn't know how to express it.
Exactly. I love that feeling. He goes on. He says, it's a timeless, formless, and ethereal realm which our higher selves reside in. This foreign dimension often goes by the name of the spiritual realm, ultimate reality, the collective consciousness, the fifth dimension, or source. Each religion and spiritual belief has different interpretations of this realm, but they all agree on a fundamental truth that it exists. Generally, we are disconnected from this realm as our egos keep us grounded to reality in order to ensure our physical survival. Which I think a lot of people need to remember, it's not all about just getting rid of your ego. If you didn't have an ego, like, at all to speak of, and you saw that a train was coming your way, you wouldn't value that. You'd be like, oh, I'll just be in another realm and it'll be fine.
Yeah, and you need to make friends with your ego. You need to make friends with that ego instead of just obliterate it all the time.
I think that's a great way to phrase it, is making friends with your ego, because there has to be a balance, right? Because there is that, like, self-preservation aspect of it. So it's not necessarily, like, complete ego death, but maybe dismantling some of those negative effects of the ego.
Mm-hmm.
Just the things you think you are, but if you really think about it that hard, that's not really you. That's something you're doing. That's your job. You know, that's a relationship you're in. It isn't you. And sometimes people go their whole lives without ever noticing that that is not them. Anyways, he goes on. He says, the ego acts as a plug to reality, which keeps our feet on the ground. I'm sure there are forces behind the scenes pulling strings in this dimension too, but typically we're bound to this realm until we die. After all, we're here to have a human experience. If it was so easily transcended, then what's the point? Oh, that's a great one. I really like this article, Riley.
Good.
Thanks for bringing it in.
You're welcome.
Imagine the object of spirituality as an alternate realm which has many different pathways leading into it. These pathways can be accessed through myriad disciplines such as meditation, yoga, fasting, and prayer. There's a barrier between the physical construct of your consciousness and the spiritual construct, but they are always tethered together. Oh, sorry, there would be a picture there, but it just describes the picture instead. It's like, you know, compressed and it doesn't show the picture.
Okay.
So, psychedelic spirituality is essentially using hallucinogens to leverage your connection to source by temporarily unbinding you from this reality. Using these substances as a spiritual crutch is like hijacking the tether to your higher self. It's the sledgehammer approach to spirituality.
That's something I don't know if I agree with. I don't know if it's the sledgehammer approach to spirituality.
That sounded a little negative the way you said it.
Yeah, but I do believe that it's an approach to spirituality. And when you take this approach to spirituality, it's not for everybody. It definitely is an accelerant to a spiritual path, and it definitely opens you up to other places. But, you know, like anything, you can't take it too much, and you shouldn't. Otherwise, you're going to lose, you know, grounding on reality.
Yep. And, like, I really love that he said, you know, what's the point of having a human experience if it's so easily transcended? I really like that because, I don't know, I just love being a human. I love this world that we live in. I'm glad that there's even more to explore out there and that it's not, the physical realm isn't all that there is, but I also really enjoy it. Goes on, he says, psychedelics cause a phenomenon called ego dissolution, where you become increasingly disconnected from reality. This means that you become more connected to your spiritual nature in absence of identity and a sense of self. The more your ego diminishes, the more the barrier between these realms weakens. Through psychedelic spirituality, you create an intersection point between these realms, where you can keep your feet on the ground and pop your head into the cosmic ocean, or in some cases, lose yourself completely in it. Certain disciplines, such as meditation and yoga, can thin this barrier too, as these practices focus on presence, which also deteriorates the ego. It's essentially the same phenomenon, using different routes to get there. One path is like slipping into a warm bath over the years of practice. The other is like plunging into an icy pool. And I really like that because I really do believe that there are many paths to God. And that's what we believe in the Shire Free Church.
Right.
And that might confuse a lot of people. Like, how can you have Muslims and Quakers in the same church? It's because we are all in the same reality, and we're just experiencing it in different ways.
And also respecting other people's beliefs. So I'm sure, like, even us all sitting at this table doing this show right now, I'm sure, you know, our views of the world in spirituality, religion, whatever, I'm sure they can differ a little bit. You know, we all have different upbringings and we all have different experiences that lead us to our current beliefs. But I'm not going to sit here and tell Bonnie that she's wrong just because I have a different perspective.
Right.
You know, like, I think respect goes a really long way.
Oh, I agree. And I wouldn't say that, you know, for my Mormon friends or family or my LDS friends or family, I wouldn't say that their church is horrible and they should leave their path from mine. Or I'm not going to say that my spiritual path within the LDS church wasn't valuable. It was. It was valuable to me to have an experience teaching me that there was a spiritual place and to access it through prayer, through fasting or whatever. And to me, that's really important because, you know, a lot of times we forget that we are spiritual beings having a mortal experience, and we're just divine beings here on this planet trying to figure it all out like everybody else. There's no prophet that's got a leg up on you. There's no apostle that's got a leg up on you. There's no pastor, no priest, no guru. We're all on this journey together.
That's really great, Riley. I agree that I have a lot of things that I am grateful for from my childhood being raised Christian. My mom wouldn't just say that, like, if I told her I saw something, like, I mentioned this earlier, she would never have just been like, no, you didn't, that's not true, because she believed in a spiritual realm, and so did my dad. And I think that that's a really valuable thing, because if you were just taught that that's all fake, it's a lot harder to wrap your head around a lot of things. He goes on, he says, when you go deep enough into a psychedelic trip, you, or whatever you means at this point, leaves your meaty vessel completely. This can be described as having an out-of-body experience. But what you're experiencing can only be described as profound, as your lifeless body becomes a vegetable. This leads me to think that absence of the ego, which psychedelics facilitate, brings you closer to your soul nature. Without a mind or body, consciousness seeps through the mesh of reality, like yolk draining from a cracked egg. Your consciousness is immersed in a realm so profound that it strikes remarkable similarities with many spiritual doctrines and beliefs. So we need to question, are psychedelics hot-wiring the connection to spirituality that has been prevalent all over the world? And that's the foundation of psychedelic spirituality. To believe that psychedelics can indeed bring you to the same dimension that all religions, indigenous and spiritual beliefs point towards, that they're in essence a shortcut to the unknown. I like looking at a whole bunch of different paths at once, though. You know, like, I think that if you are just doing psychedelics and not reading, like, I like to be eclectic.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more interesting to be eclectic and have a lot of different modalities, a lot of different things. Like, one of the things I like to work with, one of the plant medicines I like to work with is called ceremonial cacao. And it's really just pure dark chocolate from the Amazon area, like Colombia or Belize or Tanzania, and it's pure 100% chocolate, and in high enough doses it's really euphoric. It really feels good. It feels good in your body, and it helps you work through emotions in a very gentle way, and it's just a beautiful medicine, and it's been described as a mother. It's called Mama Cacao by some people, and so for me, working with ceremonial cacao has been a blessing as well, just like with cannabis and mushrooms.
Yeah, I really enjoy cacao ceremonies. One of my close friends holds them. And it, you know, it's something that you can do on your own, but it's also something that you can do in a group, and you can, you know, add as many things that you need to it. And it's just sometimes nice just to sit and share and, you know, experience, you know, the plant medicine and kind of turn that into ritual.
That's really cool. I hadn't heard about that.
Well, I have a bunch to share, and so I'll have to bring some over sometime.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting. And we were talking about using different ways to get to the same point. This point, what is it? It's hard to explain. Maybe an alternate dimension. I just like to say that I'm just after truth. I don't serve any specific god or goddess or anything like that. I think that if there is something that I would call God, it is truth, like,
yeah,
with a capital T.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because truth is just what is, and, you know, if something created me, it would have to have existed before me, and that would just make it what was already there. So that's how I think of God and truth. And I don't know, I just think it's good to like go through different things in your life to find truth, instead of just accept whatever you're told as a kid.
Yeah.
What happens when you connect to alternate dimensions via psychedelics? When you're submerged completely into a new dimension of information, you're essentially an atom in the ocean. You are nothing, with no ability to do anything, think, understand, or comprehend. You exist in a state of absolute presence, which is induced through the death of ego. Ego death removes all human filters and perceptions. This opens the gate to unimaginably complex dimensions of reality. If you venture deep enough into a psychedelic trip, it will tear apart reality right in front of your eyes. You are then lost into a realm that exists far beyond the extents of imagination. As your human construct dismantles, you are likely to experience things such as sacred geometry, a rapidly moving fractal-like universe, spirits, entities, and have access to experience, sensations, and information on a whole new level. People, myself included, report feeling completely connected with all consciousness and energy. This experience can be described as totality, or bliss. Upon waking from this state, back to your gooey, fleshy body, you might feel like you have been reborn. Psychedelics have an incredible property to reset your mind and body, flush away negative residue, irreversibly change your beliefs and perception of life and oneself. This is why psychedelics have always had such a strong affiliation with spirituality, because through them your egoic consciousness deteriorates while your energetic nature becomes more prominent. In a way, you experience so much more in this state, where minutes can feel like lifetimes, which seems well beyond the capabilities of the human mind. It really begs the question, can this experience just be credited to the mind? Surely the human mind is incapable of simulating such powerful experiences that it can completely change a person's life and outlook of reality. I don't know about that. Because I really believe in like the placebo effect, doing amazing things for people.
Yeah, for sure.
Says, if it is, then it just raises more questions. Whether these states are credited to the mysteries of the mind or whether we're tapping into something else, it is well beyond comprehension and the knowledge of modern science. And that's for sure. Well, at least what they're willing to admit.
Right.
The experience itself is certainly real despite what it is. I really like that article, Riley.
I'm glad. I love it too. It's a really interesting look at spirituality from a different perspective instead of just going to church, taking a class on reading your holy books. And there's nothing wrong with that. Holy books or scriptures are really beneficial for helping people learn about life, learning about navigating spirituality. But mushrooms and ayahuasca and DMT and things like it and cannabis are sacraments and are tools to help one connect with the divine if used appropriately. Now, yes, they can be abused, and I don't believe a government should stand in the way of people abusing it. I wouldn't promote it personally. I would advocate against abuse of these tools. But that being said, I can't prevent anyone from doing so. Now, since they are tools for spiritual growth, you know, when you start using these, you got to be really careful. You got to know what you're looking at. You got to be prepared for the emotions that are going to come up, and they will. And it's important to find a group to connect with so you can integrate your experiences into your life and work through them instead of just letting them traumatize you.
That is the word I was trying to think of, integrate.
Yes.
He brought up a feeling of being reborn after doing psychedelics. And I think that one thing that is great about having friends that are interested in psychedelics, or even just like a community online if you don't have people in real life, is just being able to talk it out, and it's called integrating, bringing it out of your mouth and trying to put meaning to it. And
absolutely, and putting it all together.
And that's why I think that people who are on this quest for more truth, a lot of times they end up, they're a lot better people. Like, maybe it sounds a little crass to say it that way, but they're usually better people. They believe in liberty and freedom a lot of the time. It's Free Talk Live. Thanks.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay Heating Pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay Heating Pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
USA News Update. There's a new man in charge of the United Auto Workers, and he has some demands of the big three in Detroit.
The new head of the United Auto Workers Union, Sean Fain, says his union members are suffering.
We're currently living in a cost of living crisis caused by corporate greed, while our wages have remained stagnant or regressed.
Fain took to social media to lay out the union's demands, including wanting a 32-hour work week for union members. Another demand is for the UAW to be allowed to strike if an auto plant is shut down. Currently, that's against federal law.
Correspondent John Schaefer. Apple Card's interest-bearing savings account has reached $10 billion in deposits. The high-yield account offered by Goldman Sachs was launched in April. Deposits earn an annual percentage yield of 4.15%. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
If you'd like to call in and bring up whatever is on your mind, 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. And in the studio with you tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
Riley.
And Nikki.
And this whole show has basically been like a coast-to-coast episode. And that's what I like to talk about, like, most of the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just want a little break from talking about
Trump,
things like that.
Yeah, like the
bad news.
Yeah, I know. It's nice to just have like these really like deep, interesting discussions that we don't always have on Free Talk Live. And I do think it's important to have a balance. Like, we should be aware of what's going on around us, and like sometimes political discussions are important. But sometimes it's also just nice to, like, get deeper than that. And, yeah, I know most of the stuff I like to bring in, usually, you know, psychedelics, mental health, health in general, aliens. Like, I like bringing in some crazy stuff just because we talk enough about the other stuff. So
that's why you're a great co-host on the Sunday Night Show, is because you bring all that stuff in, and it's a fun show.
Yeah, thank you.
And I told Riley that us three would be a really good show because... I don't know. I think Ian also, like, if there could be four people, we like to talk about stuff like spirituality, but a lot of the co-hosts would just kind of be like, not everyone, but a lot of them would just kind of get bored of it. Like, you can't help if somebody's just not feeling the topic. But I knew that the three of us would have a really good conversation
on
that.
Yeah, I would love that. I'd love to be on the show more.
Yeah. Well, I'm hosting Wednesday, so you can definitely be on a whole lot more.
Perfect.
Well, today I read this article from NPR, and I want to read a little part of it because it's just really long, but I have a lot to say about it, and I know that you guys will too, because I just think it's so weird when there's a problem, two people can see the problem and just come to drastically different ideas of a solution, or at least what she's implying here seems more like she's come to a drastically different idea of a solution than me. Also, the causes. It's like two people can look at a problem and they can, one can think, oh, this is the cause, and the other person can think, no, this is the cause. And it's just really, I just don't get why it happens.
Yeah.
So this is from NPR. It says, doctors have their own diagnosis, moral distress from an inhumane health system. And it's written by a doctor named Lisa Doggett. She says, the young man was in his mid-20s when he came to see me for severe abdominal pain at my small community clinic. The pain, worse than he'd ever experienced, had persisted for weeks and was getting worse. He cried out when I examined him. I didn't know the cause of his pain, but I could think of possibilities, including a ruptured appendix, perforated ulcer, or pancreatitis. He needed an urgent CT scan and a surgical consult. The fastest way to get both was to send him to the emergency room. But he said he couldn't go. He was uninsured. As his family physician, I had to convince him. I explained the need for further evaluation, the risk of waiting. I mean, if it was a ruptured appendix and he had already been feeling this pain for weeks, that's pretty serious. I told him the ER was legally bound to assess and stabilize him. They could arrange a payment plan. Still, he hesitated, explaining he couldn't pay the bill. This young man is one of many patients I've seen over the years who needed care and couldn't afford it. I knew that hospital charges might exceed his annual payments for rent. He could face years of debt, even bankruptcy. I don't recall his diagnosis, but I think he managed to improve without surgery. I still wonder, was I too quick to send him for emergency care? Did I do more harm than good? Like, you know, giving him a bill. And it makes sense that she'd feel this way. Basically, she goes into saying that she found out after 13 years of being in public health clinics that she was experiencing something called moral distress. And moral distress and moral injury were first used in a military context to characterize the torment felt by soldiers as they tried to process and justify their actions amid the cruelty of war. So, like, basically, like, if you killed someone in war and you start to feel like that wasn't right, I'm not doing it, but, I mean, I shouldn't have done that. And you start to justify it to yourself, like, oh, well, it was for freedom.
So it feels dramatic to compare actions in war to actions in medicine, but I can completely relate to this. I have had very similar feelings working in healthcare. And it is so hard because there'll be times where either somebody is legally sectioned in the hospital, like court order, and like legally they cannot leave. Sometimes it was my job to essentially sit in there with them and then make sure almost like security, which is very strange that like as a CNA or, a nursing assistant, if you don't know what that is, like that was my job. And then there were other times where somebody's either confused or they're impaired, whatever, and they're not consenting to the treatment, but they're either a harm to themselves or even a harm to me and the other staff, and we either have to put them in restraints or we have to use medical restraints and, you know, like give them Haldol so they either calm down. There's so many times where it's like you're put in very difficult situations like that, and it's like there would just be days where I like sat in my car after work and like decompressed and was like, either what happened to somebody wasn't right and I just sat there and watched it happen and felt helpless and couldn't help the person, or those like tricky moral grounds where it's like, okay, like they were gonna hurt themselves or they were confused or whatever, So it's like, I don't like how things went down, but it was kind of necessary. So to have to sit with that, and I was only in that kind of healthcare for like 2 years, maybe a little bit longer, like maybe 3 years. But I got burnt out from it. Like by the time I switched to the setting that I work in now as a nurse, I mean, it was like now where I work, it's a completely voluntary facility. If somebody wants to leave, they can leave. And that was something that was really appealing to me, because there were so many times when I was working at the hospital that we were essentially holding people hostage.
Wow.
And it was legal and maybe necessary, maybe not. You know, you have an elderly woman with dementia who's going to run out into the middle of the road, maybe, you know, it's, so you just get put in those like really weird moral situations where it's just like, you know, you're kind of like lose either way.
Hmm. And that sounds like a much better fit for you to go work at this place where people are voluntarily walking in. And thank you for the explanation, because basically that's what she does at the beginning of the article. She explains what she means by moral injury and moral distress in healthcare professionals. And then the very next thing she brought up is what you brought up, that there's an alarming increase in physician burnout. Doctors struggle to meet productivity demands, rushing in and out of exam rooms, working late into the evening to finish documenting in cumbersome electronic medical record systems. Despite some efforts to move away from a fee-for-service payment model, in most cases, our system still rewards volume of patients seen over value of care provided. One thing I just got to say about it is, it's weird that the little headline there was about burnout. I guess she's just, I don't know. She is explaining burnout, but she didn't use the word.
My question is, why are doctors rewarded more for the amount of patients seen? Like, they're seeing 100 patients a day. Why are they more rewarded for that than the value of the healthcare given? Shouldn't it be the exact opposite?
Yeah, and I don't even know. Yeah, it's so strange because,
because if you're working with a doctor, you should expect the best kind of health care from that doctor, because it's a family doctor, if it is, and they know your body best, they know what's up with you, they've worked with you for a long time, and if you're not getting the quality of care that you want from them, where are you going to go if all other doctors are doing the same thing?
Yeah, and it's very complex, because obviously there's a lot of choices that we make in regards to our health. You know, like diet, exercise, things like that, that our doctor can't force us to do, right? But you would think that a good doctor would keep us healthy. So it seems like they're almost more rewarded, you know, with kickbacks for, you know, pharmaceuticals and stuff like that. It's almost like they're rewarded to keep us sick. And there's a lot of incentives thrown their way from the pharmaceutical
companies.
Right,
and they're paid by big pharma to promote special drugs or whatever, and it's really, really bad when big pharma is in bed with the medical industry.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I told my primary care physician that I was not going to take birth control anymore, she, like, hounded me. Oh, my gosh. And after that, I was like, I'm never coming back here again, because that woman made me feel so uncomfortable by, I was trying to take my health care into my own hands.
Right, and I think it's important, you know, if you're not taking birth control, you don't think you can track your cycle or whatever.
Yeah, and of course, like, her, yeah, she should give me a warning. I'm 18 years old or whatever, and she's like, well, you know, like, these are the statistics. And, you know, I think it would be responsible for a doctor to, like, be real with me and tell me all of the risks associated and, you know, like, teen pregnancy and all that sort of thing. But the way she pushed it on me was,
that's so
was
crazy.
Really, it was bizarre. It made me very uncomfortable.
I just started hearing about something that blows my mind. And I have to agree, Riley, since your question was, why is the model this way where doctors are, their incentive is to get as many patients as possible? I agree that it's because the more people that they get hooked on drugs, the more money they make. And lots of doctors have complained about that. They're like, it's not like the thing I thought I was getting into, but it is the reality of it. They're basically, you know, drug dealers. So that's to answer that question. But one thing I've just heard about recently that blows my mind, this girl, this YouTuber that I watch in Canada, I don't know if this is just a Canadian thing, but she had a copper IUD uterinary device.
Yeah.
And it's a form of birth control.
Are you asking if they only do that in Canada?
No.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought you said.
No, she had that, and she just was like, wow, this makes me feel terrible. So she went to go get it removed. Her doctor wouldn't remove it.
Yep.
All the doctors around her wouldn't remove it. She had to go find a doctor that didn't know who she was and lie to him, like, hey, I want to have a baby, so I need to get this removed. And that was the only way she could get it removed.
So, and just real quick, for a woman who is in this situation where doctors won't take out their IUDs, go find a local midwife. Midwives know how to take these things out. So go find some sort of alternate healthcare practitioner, and maybe they will be able to help you. Because it's insane to me that a doctor will tell you, and also you could probably take it out yourself. There are ways where you could take it out yourself, but it's insane where you can say, hey, this thing isn't working for me, or hey, you know, I did a little bit more research after the fact, and it turns out this thing could have nasty complications that you never told me about as my doctor, and that now I don't feel comfortable having this thing in my body anymore, and they will tell you no. And this happens, and not every doctor, but it's very common where they're like, nope, it's common to have these side effects, and you need to wait at least a year or however long to get these things removed.
That's what they were telling her.
And people should be very wary of that.
Yeah.
You're going to let people, these doctors, put something in your body, and if they won't help you take it out, I mean, that's just insane to me. And that was another thing that really turned me off from the IUDs. And a lot of women get them and they love them. And a lot of women would go to their doctor, say, I'm having these side effects. Their doctor says, no, this is why. And they just accept that answer. But it's really disgusting that you almost don't have that, like, right over your own body.
It's disgusting that these people would gaslight you, yet people go along with them because, oh, they're the ones in authority.
Yeah, they're the expert.
Yeah. And it's so hard to say, oh, we gotta trust the expert when the expert is gaslighting you.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Well, already, on top of the fact that this woman sounds to me like she isn't seeing very good doctor service for her clients going on every day, and makes me wonder why a light bulb doesn't pop up in her head and make her think, maybe I need to look at this different way to heal people. Maybe there's a different way to heal people than, like, what, you know, college taught her. There's that question. And the other thing is, why does she think there's such burnout and people are so busy when in 2020 you fired all the people who didn't want to take the vaccine, who were, you know, they wanted to be nurses and doctors or whatever. And I don't know the exact number of how many people left, but it was a lot.
A lot. I mean, and like for me, I got fired and I literally found a better job where I make more money and it's a better fit for me. So, and I know a lot of other nurses who that same story where they got fired, found a job that was paying them substantially more, where they didn't have to go against their morals to get a vaccine that they didn't feel comfortable getting. So it just seems like a lot of these hospitals lost. Like the actual nurses and doctors did not lose here. It was the hospitals that are losing.
Wow.
She ends this by saying a path to change would start with addressing social determinants. She says there are no easy answers. System improvements are needed to better support doctors and nurses to ensure adequate staffing, well-functioning teams that include social workers and behavioral health counselors, and user-friendly electronic health records. Wendy Dean, a psychiatrist and co-author of a new book, If I Betray These Words, Moral Injury in Medicine, and Why It's So Hard for Clinicians to Put Patients First, has called for a better alignment of values between healthcare organizations and the people who treat patients. Too often, administrators make decisions about operation schedules and workflows without involving doctors and other frontline staff. A commitment from healthcare leaders, health insurance plans, and all levels of government to address the non-medical conditions in which we live, work, and play, the social determinants of health that drive 80% to 90% of health outcomes on a population level, would improve the health of individuals and communities. It would also decrease the pressure on doctors to treat medical conditions stemming from unhealthy environments that we can't change. See, this, just that paragraph itself is everything that I just don't understand why she's looking at it the way she is. So she thinks that if the government force people to live healthier, if the government
the government's not going to make anybody live healthier. They're going to they're going to make it look like they are, and they'll come up with some weird food pyramid or some weird ideas and force them down people's throats.
And that's
they're
what
not
they've
literally
work. Done. And why would you think that the government could just force people to work better, or, you know, work out and eat better? It's silly, for one thing. And the other thing is, I think this is her coming to the realization that I think her job is just not as necessary as she thinks it is. Like, being a surgeon, that's one thing, but I think of doctor the same way I think of the word freedom, which in a way, it's almost unfortunate that those words exist.
Yeah.
And freedom's one of my favorite words, but it's describing a lack of prison around you. It's almost sad that it exists.
Like, that should be the default.
It should just be being. Being should be what you call freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard someone say that before, and I was like, dang, that's awesome. And I kind of think
really is.
The same thing about doctors. It's like, if your job, lady, wasn't just to hand out pharmaceuticals all day, and you did something else, like went and made your job to teach kids a sport, you'd be probably doing more for the health of the community than being a doctor who goes on NPR and writes about why the government needs to make people be healthier by the time they get to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
and honestly,
crazy.
Like, who really cares? Like, I don't, I try to, like, I guess inspire people to live healthier, or at least, like, share information so people, you know, have the choice to live healthier. But why, even as a nurse, I literally don't care if my patients are unhealthy, because it's their life and they have the right to be unhealthy.
Hmm.
I can do my part and I can try to, you know, I can give them the information. I can try to inspire them. I can encourage them. I can do everything right as a nurse. And if they don't want to, and if they don't care, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They're going to do whatever they want to do. And I don't think we should, like, gun to their head, you have to eat a salad and stop eating sugar. That's not fair. They deserve the right to do whatever they want, honestly.
Do you feel you get a lot of people, whether in your old jobs or now, who come to the hospital because it's almost like some people's hobby? Like, they
yes,
like
absolutely,
sick.
Because they're trying to, and I shouldn't even say this, a lot of people are drug-seeking, and they're like, oh, I have a backache, and they're trying to get Percocet, Dilaudid, morphine, whatever they can get. There are a lot of people like that. There's also a lot of hypochondriacs who, and you know, it's a very real thing. Obviously, it's a mental thing, but they're frequent flyers. That's what we call them, frequent flyers. There's also a lot of homeless people.
Interesting.
Who, if it's cold, it's like you kind of got, you know, three options: freeze to death, figure out a way to go to jail, or go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Like that, those are kind of, or a homeless shelter if that's available. I'm assuming in the winter there's probably not a lot of space in the homeless shelters. So yeah, like, I've never worked in the emergency room before, but, you know, I talk to other nurses, I hear stories. It is very common where you see the same people in there a lot of the times.
Well, I'm glad that we got basically all we wanted to, like, we all had something to say about that, because I read that article today, and it just boggles my mind. The other thing that we could definitely get into if we have more time, but we really don't, would be just why she can't understand why healthcare is so expensive. I don't understand, but it's a lot more because of government. And
well, it's government and it's insurance companies and regulations regarding insurance companies that are making it so expensive. I mean, if people have insurance, yeah, they can pay for healthcare, but at the same time, that leaves doctors free to raise their prices in order to charge insurance companies more.
And, well, they couldn't do all that stuff without regulations forcing people to, like, get insurance who don't need it and things like that. The government is the ultimate seed in all of it.
Yeah.
if there was a free market.
The government breaks your legs, hands you a crutch, and says, here, aren't you glad we helped you out?
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. But in other news, very interesting, kind of good news, Riley brought this in, and it's from The Guardian. It says, U.S. woman, 87, fights off a teenage home intruder, then gives him snacks. It says,
so, was he hungry?
That I haven't learned yet, but it sounds like it. The household matriarch who insists on feeding visitors, especially young ones, stands among the most enduring U.S. stereotypes. But an 87-year-old woman from Brunswick, Maine, recently took that stereotype to an extreme by reportedly fighting off a teenager who broke into her home, then giving him snacks when he said he was hungry, as she sent him on his way. And that's just so funny to me.
Yeah.
Marjorie Perkins is at the center of one of the latest strange tales to come out of the U.S. criminal justice system. She was sleeping at her home about 2 a.m. on the 26th of July when she woke up, saw a 17-year-old boy who used to mow her grass standing over her and heard him say, I'm going to cut you. Oh, God.
Yeah. A little horrifying to wake up to.
Yeah. I thought to myself, if he's going to cut, I'm going to kick, Perkins said to the site. So the former elementary school teacher stood up and began putting her shoes on, but then started being hit by the teen intruder. That's so sad.
Yeah.
Perkins somewhat slowed the attack by grabbing a chair and using it as a shield, and she began screaming for help. Yet no one else was in or around the home to hear her. The teen pushed her and repeatedly punched her, landing at least one blow on her forehead, which left a bruise. Okay, so I'm sorry I called it good news. I didn't read the article. From the article, I thought he came in to steal food, and she gave him food.
Yeah, and it turns out he physically assaulted her.
Yeah, I did not know that because I didn't read it. That's really sad and really messed up. And it's even more sad that he used to mow her grass so he knew
the lighter note is that she was willing to give him food instead of just let him go hungry.
Hmm. Dang.
Yeah, this is like a huge example of be the bigger person. I'm not saying that people need to do that,
right.
But that's what she did.
Somehow he grew tired and left her alone to go to the kitchen. And then she told him to get out, and she gave him food to get him to leave. So it's a lot less nice than I thought it was, but that's just crazy. What do you think? This has been Free Talk Live. You can call in any night. We're on every night, and see you next time.
Peace.
Attention. Your money is now controlled by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi. My name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000, 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Call 800-900-8000.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.